Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Scarlet Leadership Institute monthly lunch and leadership conference call. If you would like a copy of today's slides, send an email to tom@scarletleadership.com. We will also have a playback of this call available on our website tomorrow afternoon, so you can share that with your friends who are not able to join you today. So, during the call, if you hit *7, that will unmute you, and you can ask a question. And for those of you online, you can enter your question in the box and hit ask. So enough about me. I'm going to turn it over to world-famous Joe Scarf.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the call. Just to start off here, you're going to stuck with a one-minute commercial from me. We've been in the leadership business for a little more than a decade. Our first executive class was in 2006. And we're about to kick off another class. Just by way of background, this class, we're targeting high-potential executives who are either at senior leadership roles in the company or on the way to senior leadership roles. Our program was designed with the input of 35 CEOs of some of the largest businesses in Middle Tennessee. It's our best program. Now, the kickoff is 1 week away. Our next program starts a week from Sunday, and it begins with a full-week retreat, followed by 6 2-day follow-up classes. And I can guarantee you, if you take this program, you will be a better leader when you finish. So act fast. The class starts on September 18th. Second, we have an emerging leaders class. The target student there are first-time leaders or leaders who are in significant roles for the first time. The topics are similar to the ones in this signature executive program. They're just at a slightly lower level. The emerging leaders class lasts for 8 months, 1 day a month for 8 months. Next class starts on November 7th. So if you're interested in either one of those, go to the website. Oh, by the way, the emerging leaders class will have a full day on emotional intelligence. So what you hear today is sort of a preview as to what will be in the emerging leaders class for one solid day. If you're interested, go to our website, scarletleadership.com. And now, the commercial's over. I'll turn you over to Mary Fink, our hostess.
Thank you, Joe. We're glad to be back with you. We've had a little hiatus, and we're glad to be back on the air. Our guest today is Shana Humphrey, as you know, who is an independent consultant and also adjunct faculty at Vanderbilt University. Shana has been doing a session for us on emotional intelligence and coaching for as long as we've been in business, and it is one of every student's favorite classes. So I will begin. Shana, welcome.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask some general questions in the beginning, and then we'll get into some of the more specific information. But how do you define emotional intelligence? Is it just common sense?
Well, there are a lot of people who would say that it's just common sense, that it's street smarts, and there's a degree of truth to that. But it's a field that has tremendous research and history. And if you really want to dial down all of that knowledge into a simple definition, it would be that it is a two-tiered competency. It's a self-competence, and that means a personal awareness of emotions, an ability to identify emotions, to manage and control those emotions for constructive purposes. And then the second tier is a social awareness, and that is the ability to read emotions effectively in other people and to understand them through empathy and effective social skills.
Excellent. So what?
Yeah.
Why should we care?
Exactly. Well, I could talk for 3 hours just on that question because the so what is huge in this field. The amount of research that is continuing to emerge in terms of the effect, the impact of high emotional intelligence in leadership is proving that people who have skills in this area are, in fact, more effective. They're, in fact, the superstars in their various realms, regardless of industry. I was first exposed to this topic in my fall semester of graduate school in 1995, which happened to be the year that Daniel Goleman released his groundbreaking book that I've read has since sold 5 million copies. It's translated into 33 languages. And it just electrified me at that time, and 19 years later, I'm still intrigued and still talking about it. I think the why, the so what, comes down to if you cannot create a culture where people can thrive, and that's really the job of a leader, is to set the culture, set the tone. If a leader is unable to do that, then the people he or she leads cannot perform to their best ability. And so we see all the time people who are intellectually sharp or who have incredible technical competence, but they can't also translate those skills into their emotional competence, where people feel heard, valued, inspired, and loyal to the mission and to the company. So that's really the so what. It's a fundamental of outstanding leadership.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, Joe, if you remember when we interviewed all those CEOs before we established the Signature Program, they were very clear to say it's not about strategy, it's not about finance, it's not about classes that you would typically get in an MBA program, it's all about the people skills.
Exactly. In fact, there's an 80-20 rule that has emerged from the research, and some people think it's, you know, 85-15 or, you know, but roughly 80-20. The 80-20 rule says that 80% of a successful leader's impact comes from their emotional intelligence, not from their competence. And so that really kind of to summarize the so what here, you can think about emotional intelligence as something that is beyond a threshold competence. Your threshold competence is what gets you hired. It's what allows you to be hired.
Checks the box.
Exactly. Once I have a friend, a very successful friend and executive at Accenture, who uses the metaphor of a cocktail party. He says, if you think about going to the cocktail party, in quotes here, everyone there is smart. Now what's interesting is who emerges as a leader, and that is not any longer about technical competence or, roughly stated, IQ. It's about EQ. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we've been hearing about this. I mean, we've really been hearing a lot about it in the last 5 to 10 years, and you were talking about the book was released 19 years ago, but it goes back a little farther than that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The history of this field, it's fascinating, at least to me. I was very interested to see that in measuring human intelligence, we can go all the way back to 1900. There was a French psychologist named Alfred Binet who was tasked by the French government at that time to create some sort of test that would evaluate the abilities of the children in France because they were nationalizing their education system. So in essence, we would call that today trying to figure out which kids would be mainstream and which ones may have some developmental delays, let's say. So he created this test. We now know that it was, looking back, that was the first IQ test, the first intelligence test. Then building on that, researchers at Stanford during World War I, so early again in the 20th century, knew about Binet's work, and they contacted him, and the researchers there coordinated with him and created a more advanced IQ test that was used to evaluate the capacity, the intellectual capability of the 1.7 million soldiers who had been drafted to participate in World War I. That collaboration created what is still to this day referred to as the Stanford-Binet IQ test. So that's how these are thinkers who were realizing there's a way to measure human intelligence. But so far in the story, we're just talking about mathematical and verbal capability, basically. But then there are thinkers who came later. E.L. Thorndike is an American psychologist who said, humans are smart with math and verbal skills, sure, but there's more to the human capacity. And so he talked about social intelligence for the first time in 1930. And there was a quaint definition associated with that, to act wisely in human relations. And then if we, continue through the century, we're skipping over the greats like Maslow and Piaget and Carl Rogers, but you can go all the way to the 1980s. And at that time, there was a doctoral student at Harvard named Howard Gardner, who was developing a theory called the theory of multiple intelligences. And so he's kind of standing on the shoulders of giants like Binet and Thorndike and Maslow and saying, actually people are smarter than just in a mathematical or verbal or social way. He came up with 7 intelligences, like kinesthetic intelligence, I mean, just all sorts of interesting ways to define human intelligence. But 2 of those 7 intelligences were intra personal intelligence, very internal, very clear sense of self and values and emotion and kind of personal mission, and then another called interpersonal intelligence. And so that obviously is, you know, social connection, building rapport, being smooth in relationships, creating harmony rather than conflict. So that was Gardner's work, and he wrote a groundbreaking book in 83 called Frames of Mind, The Theory of Multiple Intelligences. Interestingly enough, Howard Gardner had a classmate at Harvard named Daniel Goleman. And Daniel Goleman is the person who really built upon those two of Gardner's seven intelligences, the intra and inter personal intelligences, and he combined them, and he's not the person who coined the phrase emotional intelligence, but he built upon that phrase. He said, this is what emotional intelligence is. It's internal and it's external. And then he became famous, and Oprah loves him. And
that's right.
And
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
That's right. So do you think you either have it or you don't?
Another outstanding question. A lot of people say, oh, I don't need to know about this because I don't have that it factor. I don't have that charisma. I'm just never going to be a great leader. It's just not who I am. And so what I love to convey when we talk about this topic is that it's not a genetic predisposition like IQ. I mean, we're not talking about building IQ today. There's no point in talking about it. You are born with what you get, and do the best you can with what you got. EQ is very different because it is not a genetic predisposition. It is a skill set that can be studied, practiced, and developed. And that's why it's so important to talk about it. Anybody can improve. Although I will tell you that Daniel Goleman says that the greatest amount of learning in this area is between the ages of 0 and 20. So it is something that you want to learn when you're young. But it's and that comes from great nurturing and great education, great educators. But it is something that we all know as adults we should be paying attention to this and continually refining our emotional intelligence skills.
Right. We have a question from one of our online listeners. There's emerging evidence that show high EQ is not necessarily a good thing in all roles or functions. Could you speak to that a little?
Well, that's an interesting point because Goleman does get some criticism, and I've spent a lot of time reading his rebuttals, and I think he wins the debate every time personally, so that's my bias. But there are people who would say, you know what? What about a command and control type of approach to leadership? You know, maybe people don't need to necessarily be empathetic and concerned about, you know, people's feelings. Maybe that's not important. And there are people who would say, you know, Steve Jobs is a great example of that. But, you know, I've heard an interview with the CEO of Starbucks who said, you know what, he was an outstanding entrepreneur, but I'm not sure he was an outstanding human being. So I didn't say that. He said that. But so I'm not trying to be overly critical. But there are people who would say, you know, why not? Why not incorporate the skills of emotional intelligence in leading and inspiring people to be the best they can be?
There's so many stories along this line that you run into. I was just thinking of one. You mentioned the cocktail party thing. I know for years my wife's always nagged me when we're going out in a social environment. She says, Joe, ask questions. And I used to talk about myself, and I learned to ask questions. When you ask questions, people engage with you, and plus you learn about them. As opposed to touting yourself all the time. And it's a way to develop rapport, and it's a way to develop respect, because if you show interest in other people, they look up to you, they respect you, and they follow you.
I think you're absolutely right. When people feel seen and heard, that is the beginning. That is the seed of relationship, and that is also the seed of loyalty. Probably the best one-liner from my entire graduate school experience was that loyalty is a behavior with its roots in emotion. And I think that's profound because that applies clearly in a corporate environment, but it applies in marriages, in raising families, in schools. Loyalty is a behavior with its roots in emotion. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk then about the five components of emotional intelligence. And
okay.
We have those up on the slides for those of you who are joining us online. The first is self-awareness.
That's right.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, this is where it kind of gets fun, because we've been talking in generalizations about, you know, intrapersonal and interpersonal skills, but now we can kind of roll up our sleeves and get into the details. So in the intrapersonal category, the first of those competencies is self-awareness. And this is an important competency, because people need to have an honest assessment of who they are. We don't need to overestimate who we are. We certainly don't need to underestimate or undervalue what we bring to the table either. So people who have a high level of self-awareness have a good correlation between how they perceive themselves and how others perceive them as well. And the reason that is important is, if you're not self-aware, meaning if you don't know what you're feeling in the moment and you can't adjust in the moment, saying, you know, that person just, you know, was passive aggressive towards me, I'd like to respond in a negative way. Wait, you know, I'm going to hold that. I'm acknowledging it, but I'm going to choose a better course of action. That's the value of being self-aware in the moment. It's also something that can be gleaned over time. You know, I know how many corporations, companies have some sort of 360-degree feedback.
Right.
And there can be some flaws in that approach, but it is a great exercise to find out, you know, how am I perceived? And all of this also kind of comes together with a sense of humility. People who are self-aware acknowledge their vulnerabilities. They acknowledge their weaknesses. And there's a humility that comes with that that, frankly, is attractive to people, because when people are dealing with a humble leader, they're more likely to admit mistakes, be honest, be transparent. So in a way, being highly self-aware is good modeling for other people, so that you have a truly collaborative environment.
And on the other side of that, because some people struggle with their own self-confidence, the more self-aware you are of your good points,
exactly,
of your strengths,
exactly,
then the more your self-confidence can grow.
Absolutely. There was a book written years ago by Marcus Buckingham about, I think it was called Soar with Your Strengths. And so that concept of just identifying, what am I good at, and being keenly aware of that, not denying or underestimating that, but owning that, is clear. I mean, it doesn't even take research to tell us that obviously that's going to propel a person's success.
I was thinking back to a situation that I was responsible for back almost 15 or 18 years ago, when I allowed our company to get into putting in a new computer program, and I thought it was a real, you know, it was a really cool thing to do. Well, it turned out it paralyzed the company, and once I stood up and said, listen, I screwed up, I made a mistake, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to help everybody come together and make this work, all of a sudden attitudes changed and everybody jumped in and worked like mad to get things back on track. And I'm sure if there are any Tractor Supply people on the call here, they certainly remember that. And it took us a long time to get back on track, but I pitched in, and there were no egos involved here. It was all about, let's solve the problem.
You know, that really, Joe, that is an amazing example of exactly what I'm hoping I'm conveying well here, and that is that leaders set tone. So if there's a toxic environment in a team, in a company, in a broad organization, that falls on the shoulders of the leader. And the leader can, I think I read this recently, that CEO now means chief emotions officer, meaning that they are the thermostat. They set the tone. And so to, you know, have the humility that you just described and just say, I own it, and, you know, let's band together and work this out, creates an esprit de corps. And that's one of the values, again, of emotional intelligence, that esprit de corps and collaboration.
So, once we are self-aware,
yes,
what's the next step in the intro?
Well, the next of those five components, which it may be my favorite just because I think we've all had experiences where we fly off the handle, we lose our cool, we don't manage emotions as well as we would like, and that results in regret, which is emotionally painful and usually very costly, sometimes very tangibly costly. But self-regulation is one additional component that still falls under that intrapersonal category. It's very internal. And so self-regulation means that you take your self-awareness and you do something with it. And, you know, one of the things that people who score highly in this category, something that they do well is they delay gratification. They have excellent impulse control. And you know, there's maybe some folks who've seen the marshmallow test from Stanford University back in the 60s and 70s, where four-year-old children were brought in, and it's a you can watch it on YouTube, and CNN just did a story about it about a month ago. It's still a very relevant test. But they bring these four-year-olds into the room one at a time, and the researcher hands them one big fluffy marshmallow, and she says, you know, if you can hold off and not eat that marshmallow until I get back in a few minutes, then I'm going to bring you a second marshmallow, and you can eat both of them at that time, but it's your choice. And so you watch this video captures the varieties of responses to that challenge. And some kids are great at delaying gratification. They want that second marshmallow. Other kids, about a third of them, just say, are you kidding me? This looks good, and I'm...
She may not come back. I'm going to have this now.
Right, exactly. She may not come back. That's right. So it's interesting to see. Now, that has been tracked. 10 years later, after those four-year-olds were tested, when they were at an age roughly 14, they were given the SAT. And this is a definitive piece of research. The kids who demonstrated an ability to delay gratification had, on average, a 210-point advantage on their SAT scores, their results, than the kids who did not delay gratification. So it's interesting that you can track that even from childhood. You can measure it in terms of leadership, how high someone has risen in their career. Even body mass index is tied to self-regulation. So it's a fascinating aspect of emotional intelligence.
Awesome. I can think back on back in the 80s and 90s. I was used to, when I was younger, I got very emotional about a lot of things. And I got to the point where I get wound up about something. I was about to say some things I shouldn't say, and I said, "Oh, let's meeting adjourned for a little while." And I'd go outside and I'd walk up and down the street for a little bit, and I'd come back, and I still feel the same way in terms of the facts, but the emotion was gone. We were able to speak about things factually, and it was a great discipline. I wish I'd learned earlier on, but it's a great thing when you get wound up. Take a break, go, and particularly if you go outside the building. I thought that was very powerful.
Absolutely.
Unless it was raining.
You know, I mean, that's one of those techniques that, you know, it's not rocket science, but it is incredibly powerful. And if people have the discipline to stop and take a breath and take a break, because you cannot be, this is neuropsychology, and I am not a neuropsychologist, but I've read a lot about it because it's fascinating. The brain literally cannot be emotional and rational at the same time. So when you're in a situation that requires a rational response, but you're feeling emotional, you have got to have techniques in place to manage that so that you can come back around and be level-headed. And that, you know, great leaders are level-headed people, especially in a crisis. And I grew up with a dad who had the mantra, if you lose your head, you're dead. So I've been hearing that, and I'm probably sure he tossed that out when maybe I was losing my head, you know, as a kid with a tantrum or something. Those are words that I hear to this day when I'm under pressure and stressed. If you lose your head, you're dead.
Okay. We move on in light of the time. The third one, motivation.
Yes.
So have we moved then into inter?
You would think, and actually it's on the line. There are aspects of this that are intra and interpersonal because you can motivate others and that becomes social. But for the time being, we still can look at it as an intrapersonal capability. And that is because it's internal drive. It's a commitment to achievement. There are some people who are just outstanding motivators. One of those people is one of the great chief executive officers currently globally, PepsiCo, Indra Nooyi. And she has inspired that global organization. The people there talk about her initiative called Performance with Purpose. And so she's helped people adjust from thinking of their jobs as just a job, and now they think of it more as a calling. And so when you think about people who can stay motivated themselves rather than being burned out, or people that can motivate others, clearly that's another incredible aspect of high EQ. Another thing that she does, and I just say this as an aside, speaking of motivation, she is famous for having written 29 handwritten notes to the parents of senior vice presidents at PepsiCo to tell them what great children they raised. And I just think that, you know, just to make that kind of investment, really we're talking about some empathy, which we'll be getting to in a moment, but to just think outside of, you know, these people were raised by good people, and she herself is a parent, and all of us as parents would love to know that we've done a good job, and for her to make that effort, and then for her senior VPs to know that she thinks that highly of them and would do something that personal is just such a unique way to motivate and to honor people. So, that, you know, all of this, everything we're talking about, there is no script for any of this. There's no perfect thing to say or behavior to do.
Or list,
exactly. There's an authenticity about this that's really important, a humility about all of this that's really important. But it's still helpful to think about this in these kind of five categories as we're going on.
And I'm glad that you have the final bullet here to persevere in the face of setbacks and frustrations, because it isn't always just forward motion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Perseverance, I mean, there are, as we all know, books written on just the concept of perseverance. Frankly, as a parent, it's one of the great lessons I hope I can instill in my children. The research indicates that, you know, the people who never give up are the people who prevail. I had a funny moment in a class recently of some graduate students who are significantly younger than me, and I used the example of Sophia Loren, who talks about perseverance, of weathering just a vast number of rejections, but finally breaking the business and becoming such a, you know, an icon of the 20th century. And they tilted their head and said, "Who is Sophia Loren?" Even though her quote inspires me greatly, I'm sure there are people more current that I could call upon. But perseverance is a cornerstone of EQ. You're right.
A question about it.
But yeah. When you speak about motivation, and talking about both motivating yourself and motivating others, one of the things that Tractor Supply does so well is tell success stories. Because when you tell success stories, you're recognizing performance, and you're also, it makes you feel good when you're able to share a success. And everything you're doing then is positive. It's not negative. It's about how you achieve the success, patting people on the back for doing it, and you as the person doing the recognizing feel good about that success.
Exactly. Well, and also, and you know, that serves to inspire, and that, you know, that is one of the key verbs that great leaders are. They are inspirational. They bring they cause an individual and a team and an organization to fire on all cylinders, to be the best they can be. And again, there are 1,000 ways to do that, and I mean, that's another great technique, an example of we're going to celebrate our successes and we're going to make them public. We're going to share these things out loud.
And we hear so much today about team building and teamwork, and an inspirational leader is not only going to bring out the best you can be, but it's going to bring out the best the team can be together.
Exactly.
And model that well.
That's exactly right. There's some recent research on that very topic that there's something called, you know, individual EQ, but they're now studying group
Wow.
emotional intelligence, and that you really are the sum total of the highest level of EQ in each member. The contribution that everyone makes advances the team farther than without building these skills.
Right. Nice. Now we move to empathy.
Empathy. Well, this is the most powerful of the five. So if you're wondering where you stand, and of course there are emotional intelligence tests that people can take, and valid ones, you know, validated ones that you can order online or take online even. But if you can only be good at one of the five, it needs to be empathy. That is the most powerful because, first of all, it's the first of the interpersonal capacities. So it's the first one that talks about connecting to others. And also it's the one that allows people, as I was saying earlier, loyalty is a behavior with its roots in emotion. It's the capability that allows people to feel seen and heard and understood. We do not, Well, let me put it this way. We will be obedient to a leader who has, you know, expectations and requirements, because most all of us want to keep our jobs. You know, we don't want to lose the job, so we do what's asked. But there's a difference between obedience and loyalty. And loyalty comes from empathy. A lot of people may mistake empathy as, you know, being nice or, you know, kind of overly soft or even huggy. It's really funny.
Warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, but it really shouldn't be overly soft that way. It's empathy really comes from getting outside your perspective and seeing the issue, the situation from the other person's angle. It's a sign of intelligence to be able to get outside yourself and see other possibilities, and also see where there may be flaws, where there may be hindrances to that person's performance. So it to me, it's a very intelligent thing to do. It's not necessarily warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. It's a broadening of your understanding of a situation.
A key part of the Tractor Supply culture since 1980 has been spending lots and lots of time in the stores, executives, regional managers, district managers, everybody. And as a senior executive, we always model the behavior of talking to everybody in the store, asking as many questions as you can, never arguing with the people you're talking to, and just getting feedback from them. And you're listening to them, you're understanding what their issues are. In a lot of cases, we solve issues. Mm-hmm. And the more you listen to people, the better leadership you can perform, the better a leader you can be. And you're out there listening to people, they believe they're part of the organization, and they're much more likely to really tell you what's going on, and that helps you become more effective in what you're doing.
Right.
One lesson I learned long, long time ago is once somebody gives you feedback you don't like, the only response is thank you. Once you start arguing with people who give you feedback you don't like, you're never going to get any more. So.
That's right, and that's when defense mechanisms come up, and we can't hear something that may be extremely helpful in our development, and that's hard. It's really hard to take constructive criticism, and it's on the person giving it to give it in an emotionally intelligent way with some degree of sensitivity, humility, vulnerability even. I've been there. This is a lesson I've learned, and I want you to know it as well. This will help you progress. But you're absolutely right. Empathy, it's so powerful that people can, and I hate to say it this way, but people can manipulate it even to earn votes. Here we are in a political season, and if people can convince any of us that they, quote, feel our pain, which is a soft definition of empathy, you know, I feel your pain, then that makes a lot of people feel an instant connection and loyalty. So it's really powerful.
Some magic words I learned from my predecessor and has become part of the Tractor Supply culture over the years is keep no secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Be a no-secrets leader, have a no-secrets company. And when you don't keep secrets from people, they trust you, they believe in you, they communicate with you.
That's right.
But if people think you're keeping secrets, then they're standoffish and afraid to share with you.
Well, that's right. And it creates, you know, in the research that's called dissonance, it creates mistrust, clearly a lack of transparency. And that's when you start seeing passive-aggressive or toxic behaviors. And that's when the culture starts to feel kind of poisoned. And you're right, as simple as just saying, I'm going to be open with you. There are no secrets. He's a master. Joe knows what he's talking about.
He's been around the block a time.
Yeah, when you're 120 years old, you've seen a lot.
Anything else you want to add about empathy before we move on?
Well, it's a fascinating component. And there's a part of me that would love to analyze politics through the empathy lens, but I think we'll stay back from that. That's a pretty
dangerous this year.
It could be very dangerous. So
we might not like what we discover.
No.
Okay, so then social skills.
Social skills. Okay, this is where the rubber meets the road. So we now are well into that aspect of interpersonal, clearly, social skills. And, you know, this can be, you know, an area that even if somebody is really doing well in the four other categories, if they fail in social skills, there can be something that is so off-putting or awkward, and maybe they don't even know it, that people don't take them seriously or don't trust them or just feel uncomfortable around them. So social skills are, you know, really important, and that's not just, you know, being the smoothest talker or the person who can tell the funniest joke at the party. And it's not just that. You know, the core of outstanding social skills is listening skills. So and you know what Joe just said is spot on. You know, if you can zip it and listen, ask questions, and truly be interested in the answers with outstanding eye contact, that makes a person, again, I say this so often, but people want to feel seen and heard. And when they do, they're ready to bring their best to the mission, to you as a leader.
It's important not to let your eyes wander. And I have terrible trouble with that, but try to discipline yourself. Stay focused on who you're talking to. Don't let your eyes wander around a room and see who else is there, because that shows disrespect.
Absolutely. And there's some funny aspects, too, to some of these nonverbals, like eye contact. Another is territory, a sense of territory. These are culturally based rules, but in our culture, the North American culture, you need to have approximately the length of your arm, about 36 inches of space between you and the person you're having a professional encounter with. There's some people who don't get that. And so they're too close, and you can't hear a word they're saying because all you can hear is your own words in your head saying, why will he not step back, or why is she's too close? So there's some subtle things about social skills beyond listening, which is so primary, that are a key part of this and can be practiced. With all of that said, it kind of dovetails all the way back to self-awareness. You can't fix what you don't know. And so we really, you know, in speaking about self-awareness and its relationship even to social skills, we need to have people in our lives who are truth tellers. And you know, that's one of the things I would leave folks with today is, you know, if nothing else, just ponder this question: who in my life tells me the truth, the good, the bad, and the ugly? And, you know, it can be really hard to hear criticism, and it matters how it's delivered, but it's really important when people say, I don't know if you realize this, but, and then, you know, lay it on me. Because, like you said, Joe, you know, when people are willing to be honest with you, just say thank you.
Right.
And because that's a growth opportunity. And you can't fix what you're not aware of.
And one thing that I discovered in working with people doing 360s is that the first time you read it, and we all do this, the first time you read it, you're searching for the negative. And it's almost like a homing pigeon. You can find it.
Right.
And whatever is negative is the only thing you read. It's the only thing that registers with you. And so my advice to people that are having their 360 and get their reports back is read it. Okay, we got that. There's some negative stuff in there, because if there isn't, it's not as helpful anyway.
That's right.
Put it away for 48 hours, and when you read it the second time, it reads like a totally different document.
Exactly. It's well-rounded, and we are well-rounded people, and none of us have arrived. In fact, when you take if anybody out there does take an emotional intelligence test, you may have the same opinion that I had, which was, oh, I'll be great at this. I love this stuff. I'm going to be great at this. And I was humbled to find out that when you look at the bell curve, I fell into that kind of average category initially. This is 20 years ago, where I had strengths in 3 out of 5. That means I had weaknesses in 2 of them. Mm-hmm. And so over the course of now almost 20 years, I'm aware of that. And I know I've improved in those areas. I still haven't mastered any of it. I don't know who has, but it's actually thrilling to kind of see where's my potential for gain,
right,
growth here,
and thinking about how much better you can be.
Absolutely.
And what you can do then.
Exactly.
I wanted to say one other thing about listening, and that is the emotional component of it, because so many times we hear the words, we get the message, but we don't get the whole message. And someone might come in and say, I need to talk to you about this. And no matter how you respond, you're going to either support them in telling you the rest of the story, which is what they really came to tell you,
right,
or you're going to turn them off.
Right.
So being aware that there's an emotional component to every message, and if we miss it.
Drill down and get right, all the information.
That's right. Yeah, it can be challenging, if not painful. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a really a high degree of maturity to handle that. And, you know, like you said, sometimes you might need to take a 24-hour, 48-hour break.
That's right.
Or process something that somebody has said to you and try to find the grains of truth and the pearls of wisdom that are in that. It, again, lot of maturity that we all need in those situations, but it's so helpful.
Speaking of maturity and social skills, today is September 8th, and 2 months from now is November 8th. So the mature social advice is to stay the heck away from political conversations for the next 60 days.
Exactly. I felt strongly that we should dodge that today. There's so much analysis that would be fascinating, but we're not going to go there.
Right. So we have gone through the five, and we have a question from one of our online listeners. Are there opportunities to take EQ tests online that are free but reliable, and what are the names? And I was going to ask you the names of some other references as well.
Absolutely, there are. There are probably a couple of different resources that I most trust, and I'm just a person with an opinion, but one place that I would recommend is going, frankly, to www.danielgolman.info. And on his website, he's got an entire tab about assessments and tests. And so you can evaluate, you know, the different types of tests. Some of them are meant for corporate use. Some are intended for individual use. So it just depends on what your interest or need might be. But anything that Goleman has done is backed by research. He's currently at Rutgers. He has this really long name, the Consortium for Research in Emotional Intelligence and Organizations.com. I mean, it's this big thing. In fact, he was in Nashville just a few months ago, and you would have thought that a rock star, I mean, for me. Most people probably weren't jumping up and down when I found out. A great friend of mine let me know he was coming, and I was just beside myself because I love him so much. But he is a scientist first, PhD in psychology, and anything that he would share or promote on that website, danielgolman.info, would be something that I find trustworthy. There are also, you know, countless books. There's one called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people have seen that, maybe purchased it. There is an actual
assessment
in the book that I don't think it goes as deep as somebody who really wants to study this could go, but it's a preliminary
start.
Right. It's a good It's an easy place to order the book or pick it up somewhere and So I get this question all the time. So and I knew we'd hear this today. It is a great question. But there are so many of these tests out there, and they really need to make sure that they're validated and connected to research, because there are people that, you know, obviously would like to just make money off of this, and it's almost like a personality test that you take on the internet that means nothing. So I would recommend doing research, and Goleman's website is a place that I personally would start.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
We are going to take questions now. So if you have a question, ask it. If you are online and you want to send us a question, we can answer those as well.
If you're on the phone, hit star.
Okay, we have another online question. What suggestions do you have for helping someone with a strong empathy strength but who may not have or exercise enough self-regulation to be the leader he or she could be?
Mm.
Wow, that's a great question.
They have a strong empathy, so they have some social skill that's very well developed, mm-hmm. but they're not regulating mm-hmm. emotions very well. Well, you see how all of these five are so interconnected. So, I mean, it's great that they have strong empathy skills. That's a wonderful capacity, but it will be undermined immediately if you can't stay cool under pressure or if you don't have techniques to keep you centered.
Or you get right into the emotion of the other person, or you fall right into that.
Right. And, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because that's one of the areas where people can have misunderstanding about this topic, is that they get over-involved in the other. You don't need to be carrying the burden or the emotional weight that someone else carries. There's still a very healthy kind of rational distance and boundary there. But that's an interesting question. Somebody who, it sounds like, has strengths in the interpersonal capabilities, but maybe is struggling a little bit to build in the intrapersonal. And, you know, Daniel Goleman talks about this. There's some great writers and thought leaders in this area, Jeremy Kubitschek and Steve Cockrum, who talk about, in a recent book I'll mention in a moment, but who talk about that you have to be able to lead yourself before you lead others. You cannot be a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do leader. You have to set an example. So for people that, and I, you know, from this question, I can't know fully what that means, poor self-regulation. I don't know if they lose their temper or if they get their feelings hurt.
Or if you cry, I cry.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure. I can't know the details of that. But that fundamental truth, you cannot lead others until you can successfully lead yourself. There's a connection there.
So would one piece of advice not be find that person that you trust to help you see yourself as you really are?
Absolutely.
And maybe help you with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. To seek feedback. And sometimes in the classes I'll ask folks, you know, who are your truth tellers? Who's in your – and a lot of people say my spouse, my sibling. You know, maybe they do have a great mentor at work, which is fantastic. But the bottom line is, if you're not good at self-regulation, you need to adopt some techniques. And whether that's meditation or guided imagery or there's a behavioral technique, cognitive behavioral technique that I teach in our full-day class called systematic rationalization that's really powerful. And that's a technique that helps people sort their stressors and then create a master plan of how they're going to address those stressors. So for people who feel overwhelmed and therefore ineffective, they don't know where to start, this particular technique that I'm talking about, systematic rationalization, helps people with that. So this person needs to acknowledge, I've got weakness in this area, and now I need to go on the search for some techniques that work for me.
Okay. We have some other questions.
All right.
What are some things you can do to prepare ahead of time for a difficult conversation with an executive or business partner? So managing up.
Absolutely.
When you know the EQ of the party may still be ...
developing.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that one of the truly hardest
Absolutely.
Things that we all encounter? You know, we can only truly control ourselves, our response, our approach, but sometimes some setting of expectations prior to that conversation is, again, not rocket science, but a very effective technique to let somebody know that when we meet, mm-hmm. maybe you're acknowledging this is going to be
difficult.
There's going to be some conflict, but maybe setting the tone beforehand of what your goals are, what you hope to accomplish, what collaboration you hope will occur.
I get a couple of thoughts here. Plan ahead of time. Make sure you know what you're going to say. You know what the facts are. Second, stick with the facts. Don't get emotional about anything. And you know, just talk about what you know is true, and then tell yourself before you get in there, I'm not going to lose it. I'm going to stay calm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's so true. It's in the preparation stage that you'll have the best chance for success in those situations. And again, it goes back to self-regulation. Just no matter what they say, what they toss out, be unflappable.
Right.
Just make that decision in advance. They will not shake me.
Here is one that's sort of related to that. If there is a senior leader who doesn't quite get it, are there better approaches than others to use to address? And secondly, what about those leaders who have significant control and use well-placed displays of emotion? Is this a skill, or would it be considered non-transparent and fake if discovered? So is there such a thing as too much self-regulation, I guess, maybe?
Oh, well, you know, of course there is.
There are two questions there?
Yeah, there were two.
Okay.
Well, and in not being authentic, for example, Indra Nooyi, again, the CEO and chairman of PepsiCo, is well known for walking barefoot through the hallway and singing. And you think, are you kidding me? You know, this person would do, but she's being authentic. So that's who she is. So, and if I'm interpreting part of that question correctly, you know, if this is this somebody who's not being transparent mm-hmm. and authentic with their emotions, yeah, people read right through that.
Absolutely. Well, I think there's a possibility of too much of anything. So too much self-regulation would keep you from displaying what's a normal emotional reaction. So there could be some of that going on. But the first question was the one about the senior leader who doesn't quite get it. Are there better approaches?
That, let me tell you, that, I mean, this is why that this topic is so riveting to people, is because we work with people all the time who, and I don't want to say this in a judgmental way, because there are aspects of this that I still don't get. I'm still working on it. But yes, we work with and for people all the time who may not get it. So I, you know, there's no magic wand to wave here, but having whatever lines of communication do exist, whatever forms of feedback do exist, so that hopefully that person can realize that the way they perceive themselves may be a little bit inflated compared to the way others see them, because that person eventually will be pushed out of a leadership role. They won't be there long. They need to be receptive to that.
And I think, Joe, what you said earlier about approaching someone with, are you aware, did you know, gives them the option to, yeah, I did, and, you know, and it's okay, but maybe not. Maybe I'm totally unaware of it, and it's a way to approach the topic without seeming to be better than they are or knowing more than they do.
And it can be very difficult, because any of us who are in a subordinate relationship with a leader,
you can't give that.
I mean, you could...
Slippery slope.
Right. You could be in jeopardy, for sure.
You could always give them a Daniel Goleman book. Anonymously.
Right, exactly. Just put it on the desk with a little red bow.
That's right.
That would be a great approach.
Okay, next. How would you recommend to encourage other people in your organization to build their EQ skills, EI skills?
Well, the proof is in the pudding. When you start studying the corporations who are led by people who have high levels of emotional intelligence, and you see the bottom line financial results, you see the rates of employee retention, the rates of employee satisfaction, the rates of customer satisfaction, the esprit de corps, the camaraderie, the fun. When you study the companies that are getting it right, and it's easy to find these, just, you know, these articles that we see once a year in Forbes and Inc., you know, the best places in America to work. Study those organizations, or have people who have the power to influence, have them, you know, we need to be studying who's getting it right and then replicating the things that they're doing right. And so that's a great way to do it. And study some of the great chief executive officers of our time. I mean, the Warren Buffetts, Jeff Bezos, Larry Fink. There are people who believe in this. He's the CEO of BlackRock. There are people who... But not only do they study this and build this in themselves, they have put it into the culture of the organization.
It's in their DNA, so they are able to impart it to everybody else.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there's something called social-emotional learning, SEL, that is now being instituted in schools across the country so that these skills are being developed in children. And it's not just so they'll be nicer. Although
there's nothing wrong with that,
and the rates of bullying diminish incredibly when you see this type of education happening in schools as well. But academic achievement increases. I just read an article that it increased in one school by 15% in 1 year. Their standardized testing went up 15% after having this year-long unit on social emotional learning, how to be empathetic. And again, even just with bullying, so. Whether we're at an early stage in lifespan or middle age or late stage, these things do have a measurable impact. The data is there. The articles are being written. This is not a mystery. It's exciting.
Right. Okay. Are leaders with high emotional intelligence as effective while using electronic communication, or do you see their effectiveness heightened primarily during face-to-face interactions?
Oh, I love that question.
I know.
Especially as a person who teaches business writing to MBA students, because we talk about tone a lot and how much is lost in a written or especially a digital communication. So that's a great point. Of course, we are more effective and more powerful when we can exhibit our empathy and exhibit our social skills. People can hear our tone of voice. All of those things allow us to be clearer in our message. But even in an email, there is a way. It takes intentionality. It takes thoughtfulness. It takes incredible word choice. But there is a way to communicate through the written word, something that is still warm and collaborative and connective. But most people are getting, frankly, a little lazy, a little sloppy. And there, I hear all the time about conflict that has emerged from an email that was misinterpreted. So it's something that we were paying a price. It's really cool. The modern age is awesome, but there's a price for everything, and that's one we have to be careful about.
And one more. What are some techniques for dealing with individuals that do not practice good listening skills? Practice harder.
Right. Exactly.
Practice more.
Well, I mean, these are the people that need the feedback. So, you know,
Are you aware
that when you look off into the distance while I'm talking to you, or roll your eyes,
continue to do your email.
Exactly. I don't feel like I'm having the honor of your attention, and it's hurtful in some way. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly, to communicate directly would be best, but it can be tricky.
Sometimes just stop talking when you think people are not listening to you. And that gets people's attention in a
hurry.
That's
true.
Oh, absolutely, because then I'm silent. You know, we think, oh, yeah, I'll just get louder and demand attention.
Yeah.
Sometimes the opposite can be a really effective technique. Just get quiet, and then they suddenly look up like, hey, what happened?
Well, you're not listening.
Right. Yeah. I need your focus.
If you had been listening, you would know what happened.
Right, exactly.
There you go.
That's right. And listening well is physical, too. I mean, we've talked about eye contact, but it's posture. It's you know, the way you're angled, and it's a way.
Leaning in.
Exactly. That forward lean is a key part of demonstrating to somebody that I'm actively listening to you. And it's so powerful because it makes a person feel honored. I mean, again, seen and heard. It's powerful.
Right. Shana, this has been a wonderful conversation. Do you have, or maybe you could give me a list and we could post them on the website of some references that you think are good?
Absolutely.
Or other things, websites that
Absolutely.
You recommend?
And in fact, I will do that, and I'll, if folks are wanting to know what I think is the best and most current book on this topic right now, it's called Primal Leadership, and it was written by Daniel Goleman and a couple of his colleagues as well, but Primal Leadership is probably the most powerful up-to-date book on this topic currently.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shana, thank you so much for joining us. Another short commercial. The Signature Executive Program will be kicking off September 18th. If we can still have room for a few more, go to the website, scarletleadership.com. And for the emerging leaders, that will be kicking off on November 7th. And remember, the emerging leaders will have a full day on emotional intelligence taught by Shana. So thanks for joining us. Our next call will be on Wednesday, October 11th. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great day, everybody.